personal coach and trusted attorney, Andrew Leaf, who will help you get started in building your real estate empire. Grow your self-confidence, find your grit, and get the skills needed to dominate the real estate world. This is Real Estate Investing with Andrew Leib.
We're up to tip of the week, and this is all about how you get that money when you're doing a real estate investment. Everyone we know tells us they're investing in real estate. Investing in real estate. Can I give you money? Can I invest in real estate? We have friends left, friends right. They're all investing in real estate, and they have partners. And they want to make partnerships. You want to hear something wild, Lauren?
Yeah, tell me.
I've never seen a partnership in real estate. You see, they don't do partnerships in real estate. You form what's called a limited liability company. Why aren't you going to do a partnership? Well, for a variety of reasons. First of all, a partnership is not going to protect you from liability exposure. So a limited liability company is what they're going to do. Is that's going to own the real estate. And the limited liability company is going to shield the exposure from the real estate at the company level, meaning that if I have $1 million in assets and the real estate is only $200,000 of my assets or $300,000 of my assets, let's say it's $300,000 of my assets, and let's say there was an exposure point where someone gets sued, a worker, someone gets sued constructing this real estate, and let's say one of the people, the contractors, gets sue me because they get very injured for $1 million. They would only be able to go to the $300,000 level because the LLC caps the real estate. So they're going to be creating these partnerships in LLC.
What if somebody just wants to be a silent investor?
Well, that's what I was going to get at. We get all these people that want to be a – what does that mean to you, yeah, Lauren?
That people just want to give you money and say, make the money for me, do all the work, and just give me the profit?
It seems like that to me. So what I'm trying to understand is why would you do that with someone? Like what is – and what type of profit and – let me ask you a better question, Lauren. I have a question back for you.
Okay.
Let's assume you're the silent investor. And let's assume I'm not doing what you want because I'm the operating investor. What are you going to do about it?
Well, I'm just assuming that you know what you're doing, right?
Well, I do. I just am incompetent this week.
Oh, this week you're incompetent. Okay. Well, you're still going to give me money.
Well, what happens if I don't? What are you going to do about it? And who's the property on these silent investor things? Back to my original point. Who's the deeds name in? Because when I see these silent investor things, when people do it themselves without a lawyer, what they do is they have one person own the property and the deed in their name. And then the investor gives them money. And the investor magically thinks the money's going to come back. And let's make no mistake about it. You can have a partnership through operation of law, but you can't be an owner of the real estate unless your name's on the deed. So if you're an investor that gives money, and let's assume you only give money and you expect this partnership and your name's not on the deed, the only thing you could do is bring what's called a lawsuit for a constructive trust. We do these lawsuits a lot. And what a constructive trust means is that you have a confidential or fiduciary relationship. Fiduciary is what we're talking about right now, where someone has to do something for the benefit of another. Then there has to be a promise. The promise is that I'd give you money back for your investment. And then there has to be reliance on that promise. And then based on that reliance, I had to achieve undue enrichment. In English, I had to take your money to enrich myself to make more money, and then you could sue me retroactively to obtain ownership of the property.
Let's break that down into even more English.
Well, it's not even about the English, Lauren. What's more about is how much money is that going to cost you to be able to win this lawsuit? So what I'm saying is in the state of New York and in most states, there's something called a statute of frauds. A statute of fraud says that the deed is the only thing that controls the ownership of property. And what I'm telling you is that there's an equitable type of lawsuit where you can avoid the statute of frauds. In English, Andrew owns the property. Lauren's claiming she gave money. Lauren's saying, my name's not on the property, but I want to own it. You could bring a lawsuit called a constructive trust lawsuit where you say, judge, forget the whole formalities and the rules about the deed and just let me own some of it. But my point to you on that is, how much money is that going to cost you? And how much of this is going to be a 3-5 year lawsuit, 3 to 5 years, and you're going to be out hundreds of thousands of dollars in this lawsuit. Now, if you would have created the LLC in the first place, you wouldn't be in this predicament. So what an LLC is, again, is a limited liability company. And I want you to think about it like a partnership. But I invest with people. I do business with people. And you know what they say to me? Send me the partnership paperwork. Isn't that backwards? Isn't that completely – shouldn't we agree on who's responsible for what and who gets what decisions about what before we do anything?
Okay. So let's just say we have a construction or a contractor. we have a real estate broker, and then we have the person with the money. And they're saying, let's go, all go work together and let's go buy this property, and then we're going to make this our real estate investment. What should they do?
So that's exactly what we're talking about. So what Lauren's saying is that there's three different people that want to become real estate investors. And just so I'm clear, you had the broker, mm-hmm. you had the contractor,
mm-hmm.
and then you had the money guy or yep. money gal.
Yeah.
Probably money gal in your case.
Yeah.
Because we know you're not doing the construction. So she's got clean fingernails. So here's the thing. What I'm saying is you need to create a partnership plan. And that's called an LLC, a limited liability company. You need to have what's called a membership agreement, which is the ownership structure. But you don't need to know the legal mumbo jumbo. What you need to understand is who's responsible for what. Here's my question. Who gets to pick the supplier for all the raw materials?
The contractor.
Okay. So let's agree on that. Next question. Who's listing the property?
The broker.
Does he get paid to list the property, or does he just get paid as part of the partnership and he's doing the brokerage for free?
Depends who's putting the operating agreement together.
Well, that's what we're discussing right now. And when the contractor uses the supplies, does he get an override from the vendor like he normally does stuff? Or is he instead going to be doing this all on the
cuff? Are these all things you put in an operating agreement?
That's exactly what we're talking about right now. And the money guy right now, let's assume he thinks the house is ready to be sold. Let's sell it right now. And let's assume the broker says, oh, no, no. We need to first furnish it because staging is all the rage. And the money guy says, I need my money back right now. And the broker says, but I need more money. Who decides when they sell it, and who decides when the money guy has to give more money?
So all these things should be discussed prior.
Well, I got another one, Lauren. I just don't want to.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you know. The money guy, he's rich, 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 rich. But he's not friends with other two. You see, the broker and the contractor, their spouses are friends. They're friends. They all love each other. They work together. But they met a rich guy, rich gal, the money guy, right? And if the broker or the contractor died, they'd probably be okay with their spouse taking their spot because they've known each other forever.
Wait, do spouses automatically take their spot if they die?
I don't know. We should probably put that in the agreement too. Have you ever had like a partner that you hated their spouse and you didn't want them to be your partner next? You see, the spouse is going to end up owning what they owned. So unless you have what's called a buyout provision on death. And here's my next question. When you're not the money guy, how do you plan on buying people out when you don't have the money? Maybe you need to have a life insurance plan that we have for each of the owners so there's money set in there to be able to buy each other out. But let's change the story altogether. Let's assume no one dies. Everyone's good. Everything's great. There's the contractor. There's the broker. And there's the money guy. And again, we're going to assume that they've discussed who's doing what, meaning I imagine the broker's not going to be able to double dip because their whole investment is the brokering the property. I imagine the contractor's not going to be able to double dip because their whole investment, their sweat equity, is their whole developing the property. But let's assume that the contractor comes to other two and says, great news. My friend Tommy wants to rent the place. He's going to give us a fortune. Broker, you don't need to do anything. We should hold the place and make money. And the money guy says, but I need my money. How does the money guy force the sale when the other two people don't want to sell? Do we have buyout provisions in it? Do we have triggers to sale? Do we have determining factors of when we're going to list it?
Wait, Andrew, while you're talking, I'm thinking in my head, do these three people need their own attorneys before they make that operating agreement?
So you said before, they definitely need their own attorneys, or at least they have to be competent enough to know what they're reading. So you can have an attorney for the company itself, ethically, and that attorney could write everything. And then each of the three people can review the agreement themselves, or they can have their attorneys review it. But not any attorney can represent one person and represent the company. That would be a conflict. So what that means is that no one's going to look out for these individuals if they're also looking out for the company. So to your question, depending on how much money it is, maybe the company should have an attorney and all three people should have an attorney. It depends how much money people are putting into it. I don't know about you, but when I give away a dollar, I like when it comes home to me. I've been missing my dollar. I sit there and I think about my dollar. I'd send it cards. I want my money to come back to me. And what I find is that when I don't have an attorney that looked over documents for me, and Lauren, I am an attorney, but I still have attorneys look over documents for me. When I don't have an attorney look over documents for me, my money doesn't come back to me. And I want my money to come back to me because we have other questions. What happens if they need more money and the money guy has agreed to only put in $400,000? Does that mean everyone has to equally contribute? Who decides who contributes? Oh, by the way, does the money guy get his money back before they get their percentage interest? There's just so many questions we have. So what I really need to go over here is that when you're going to do an investment, you have a partnership and you have a money guy or a money gal.
Mm-hmm.
What are the rules? And you asked about attorneys, Lauren, but I want to back up. Have you considered just discussing these things? I want everyone to take out their pen, take out their paper. This is something you could do before you speak to the attorney. I want to know who's responsible for physical labor. Who's going to manage the laborers, even if it's not the contractor? I want to know who's responsible for the legal. Who's managing the attorney? Who's dealing with the attorney for evictions? What happens if there's a lawsuit?
Who's managing the books?
Who's doing the accounting? Who's doing the books? Who's doing the payroll? What about compliance, expediting? Who's going to be going to the town? What about hiring when we hire these people? Who's doing that? Who has decision-making control for what? Let's think about the entire business and who's responsible for what. On financial rewards, does the money guy get his money back first before we allocate the money? Or are they just dividing it, divvying it up? We mentioned death to you before. What about buyouts between the different parties? One person wants to stay in, one wants to get out. What about additional capital contributions? What happens if we were going to bring in another investor? Do we dissipate everyone's percentage shares or does only one person's shares go out?
What if they bring in somebody to go get a whole bunch of investors? Is that securities?
It could be a security. You could be doing what's called the Howey test, and you could be doing security without filing with SEC and get everyone in jail. There's just so many questions. So what we want you to know on our real estate tip of the week is that when you do a investment, you have to plan it out.
This is Real Estate Investing with Andrew Leib. Find us on social media at Listen to Leib or visit listentolieb.com.